Celebrate the historic 100th Greeley Stampede, June 23rd through July 4th, featuring concerts, rodeo, carnival, and more. Tickets available at GreeleyStampede.org.
Hello, you're listening to The Nerd Show, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA, Northern Colorado's voice. You have the three nerds in the Allo Communications studios, Nick Kenny, Scott Magerflesh, and Micah Kilpatrick, a.k.a. Darth Harmonic, Darth Monger, and Darth Ambivalous.
I know, we have a little element there that we kind of do at some points, but we're not hearing it right now, but that's okay.
Little technical difficulties.
Technical difficulties. Micah's playing, like, wearing four different hats in studio right now. We can see that, so.
And he is rocking all of them. Oh, well, that was the theme music from Stranger Things. You know, they've released the episodes differently than they originally intended to. Actually, six and seven were supposed to come out July 1st instead of the May 31st drop, but they actually were out, which is why I was kind of shocked. I'm like, wait, I thought these weren't coming out for a while, but holy moly, macaroni and cheese. Has Stranger Things been intense? Just intense.
Yeah, it's so I will be honest, I have been, you know, going like mad the last few weeks, and so I'm only through episode 4, but oh my gosh, it lives up to all of the hype. It lives up to everything everybody's talked about, and I don't know if I had chills or was on the edge of my seat or what, but literally had all of those things going at that point. It was just like, "Holy cats, I can't believe," you know, and I was freaking out there. I don't know if we need to do a spoiler alert, but I seriously was worried.
Spoiler alert.
Well, I thought Max was going to die. I literally did.
I was like, kind of hoping Max would die. No offense. No offense to Max, but I was kind of hoping.
I think I was preparing myself that could happen just because of the way things have gone. And I was just like, oh my gosh. And I didn't know until like the very, very end of that show. It was just like, and then, you know, we get a surprise, you know, special guest appearance by Robert Englund, who, you know, has done a couple things when it comes to horror in the past. Just a couple.
I think we'll see how the segment goes, but we'll run this segment up through episode 4 and see where we are for the next segment, because I'll just say, Scott, 5, 6, and 7, I'm still trying to process. I finished it up yesterday, and I'm just, okay, a little numb. It was like me in the end of Game of Thrones, like, okay. And I also learned there's going to be a season 5. I thought this was it.
No, they had mentioned 4 and 5. And I think we had talked about this a couple months ago that I originally thought that like volume 1 was going to be season 4 and then volume 2 was season 5. But what we found is they went completely all in, made it all season 4, but there is going to be a season 5. So I remember us talking about that.
Well, I have theories for that, too. I just got to write them down so whenever we talk about them. But, oh, my gosh, the direction of this show, you know, going back on season 1 to introduce us to the Upside Down and to the Demogorgon and the Mind Flayer to season 2 and then season 3, like, they've pulled back no punches. This is a horror show now. I mean, full-fledged, terrifying. And the acting.
The acting took a step up.
For some of the actors, you know, some of the strong characters from early in the seasons are now some of the weakest, I think. But maybe it's because their storylines are a little less interesting to me.
I would agree. I think they gave Max, the person who plays Max, Sadie Sink, they gave her an opportunity to do more. The gal who plays Eleven, she was incredible this season. She really got a lot more.
And even in season 3, she was really branching out of her element from that awkward kid she had played in seasons 1 and 2 into season 3.
I didn't like season 3. Season 3 was very tacky to me.
You were a teenage boy once, weren't you?
Yeah,
that
but like that.
Very much. That's how I describe season 3. I didn't like it, it made me it didn't. But the story overall, I was like, okay, well, this is all this teenage angst that I just roll my eyes at nowadays. But I'm like, you know what? I was there. We were all there at some point. It's just been so far removed. I had to take that layer off to not be as critical. And I liked that story a lot for how the Mind Flayer was, you know, using Billy and the people to control them and what energy it used. Like I liked season 3 a lot more than season 2. Again, getting over the kind of like, okay, well, the teenagers will be teenagers type of thing. But you're right, Sadie Sink is the star, at least of episodes 1 through 4, of just her facial expressions, the weight that she's carrying for the guilt that she has about losing Billy, thinking it was somehow her fault, to like just owning that, well, I think I'm going to die.
Yeah. And I agree wholeheartedly that the storyline is really focused on Max in these first few episodes. And like I said, because I've only seen through 4, I don't know what's coming next, especially for Elle and everything else. But they've done a great job, and she has really stepped it up in my mind. And I think that they've all been phenomenal from an acting perspective. I think every single character has really played to their full potential in some of these areas. And I think because it's fresh in my mind, but when you're seeing those flashbacks of Max and the rest of the crew, when she's,
at the mall?
The mall, but when they were starting to become friends and they're getting together and, they play the music in order to kind of draw her out of that and they kind of make that connection, it was very, very powerful. And I got a little choked up and I was like, man, those elements. And it was all of them. It wasn't just Max and Elle, it was the whole crew that were going through these things, and she was remembering those elements. And I didn't have any bad memories or bad thoughts about any of the previous seasons. It's been really well written and acted and developed. And, this whole, the other element of the Russians, I really like it because it is not going the way that you thought. And I hate the fact that we always want to come up with a happy ending. I hate that we're all going to make things work and it's all going to be great and it's wonderful. And they definitely threw us a little bit of a curveball with, Ivan or whatever his name is, the Russian in Alaska. And that was unexpected. And I like the way that they're going with it because they are in a world of hurt right now, and how is that going to flesh out?
The poster for this season of Stranger Things has a rectangle with the left kind of triangle of one story plot, the top triangle coming down toward the center with another of the characters. So there's 4 subplots going on, and none of them are weak.
No.
And to pull that off is so telling for the Duffer brothers. You're like, oh my gosh, any time that they're cutting from one, you're on the edge of your seat, and then you're like, oh my gosh, and you sit back, and then you get drawn to the edge of your seat with that next story plot, whether it's the Russian plot or it's the California gang, or if it's the Hawkins gang, or if it's the L. It's nuts, and they're all so interconnected, doing their own subplots and own mystery solving there. I can't wait for it all to come together, if it will come together. I mean, of course it will, but like you, Scott, I thought it was going to be, these 2 seasons were it, and it was going to end on July 1st or when it comes out. But I want more Stranger Things. Like, I forgot how much I enjoy that show, how much I love that show, and those first 4 episodes just sweating like, oh my gosh, Max is, no, please no, please no, please no, just awesome, jaw-droppingly, jaw-breakingly, just like what Vecna's doing. Awesome.
Well, how she survived, I think, was probably the best part. She's being told, you can talk to us, share with us. We're your friends. We're here for you. And she's isolated herself. And finally, as she's about to die, she realizes, oh, they are here for me. There is an escape. And she literally runs to them. She runs to her friends.
And from the upside down.
It's her opening up.
Well, and do you even have, even in that moment, you have all these things that are being thrown at her that could have caused her to stumble or to fail. And I think for me, the way I really enjoyed it was that I can understand the angst, and if we want to get really into the nerddom kind of side of things, I think a lot of people who were fans of, Star Wars or Star Trek or Battlestar Galactica or all those things, you always felt like that you were kind of in a bubble, or D&D, whatever, that your friends were your friends, but they weren't really your friends, that you didn't really have those close personal friends, or if you did, you were just a moment away from them turning on you or, shunning you or casting you out. And for me, that was a really great character development moment, because I think that's what Max was going through and feeling like she had to keep those people at arm's length. And it really reinforced, no, you don't. We're here for you. we care about you, and she's finally buying into it, and that allowed her to escape. And without that, she would have died. And I really enjoyed that as a story of kind of what was happening with a lot of folks who were in that kind of group, that category, that, you know, that crew found themselves in, that really kind of was a part of what happened during that pop culture environment in the 80s, that there was a lot of people who didn't feel like they fit in. And I think about my own, you know, high school experience where I kind of fell into multiple categories. And so I kind of got to bounce around a little bit, you know, a little bit like Lucas, and you played the jock, but you also were the nerd. And it's like, how do you deviate, or how do you change between the two and still hold true to yourself? And I really like that part.
I think Max's storyline, like her specific storyline, is actually my favorite part of the series. But I'm not quite as positive, I would say, about the Russian storyline. And the only reason why I don't like that is I don't like the Joyce and Murray thing. Every time Murray shows up, it's really annoying.
Oh, I think Murray is one of my favorite characters. Just
because
subtly
he's annoying.
Yeah, he's just over the top from when you meet him. And I love Murray, and I love their chemistry and their dynamics. I love them.
Joyce is like Joyce. They gave Joyce a lot to work with in her first two seasons, and then suddenly in season three, she's just a joke now. She's just someone who throws out jokes. And that's one thing that bothered me about this season is Robin. Robin, who I really liked last year, she had this reveal about who she is.
Yep.
That she's now been turned into a, I'm going to throw a joke out there, and I'm going to throw another joke out there.
That whole monologue when she's in the office of the guy who's running the sanitarium.
Oh, that was
brilliant.
That was brilliant, but one of very few good parts about her. She was actually one of my favorite characters, and I was kind of bummed out about that.
I think it fits her perfectly because she was that character to Steve. She was quippy and she was snarky to him in season three, and then, you know, heard all about Dustin and snarky to him, and then all of a sudden, you know, in the span
and
of a few
she's
days.
Goofy. No, she's not snarky, she's goofy.
I don't think so. I think in the span of a few days, she gets to take on the Mind Flayer, and her whole world has changed, and that's her defense mechanism. She's terrified, she's horrified, and finally comes out as who she is to Steve and feels comfortable around them. And I think that's just incredible writing for her character. And I think it fits her story arc really well.
Agreed.
And when she, I mean, it's just, I don't know. Yeah. You get all these characters and you remember where they came from. You know, Steve Harrington goes from you just want to take a baseball bat to his face in season one. Season two, you're like, yeah. I think I might try to liken him again. Season three, like, holy cow, this guy's awesome. To season four, it's like, Steve Harrington, you know, you're just the biggest fans of him. Gosh, I'm loving this season. It's so good. We might talk more about that coming up.
Probably
we
so.
Might not. We'll see what happens. Stay tuned for more of The Nerd Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Nerd Show, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA here in studio with Micah and Scott, and I'm Nick. Just wrapped up kind of a little brief recap of...
We should do video on occasion, because I think if everybody could see us, we're all sitting there bouncing to this song. Yeah. We're coming back on air.
It's something I do want to do as The Nerd Show grows, but all right, that was Running Up the Hill by Kate Bush, the song that saved Max from Vecna, from certain death. Oh my gosh, I was just, like Scott said, waiting for that leg to snap. Ooh, so glad it didn't happen.
Yeah.
But before we dive into Obi-Wan, we will recap more of Stranger Things, but for the safety of Scott and the amazingness that are episodes 5, 6, and of course 7.
Which is going to take you a while.
I know it is, and that's why
I sat down yesterday to watch episode 7 and go, an hour and 40 minutes? Like, I don't have that kind of commitment, but I have to know to clear, 3.5 hours of time, almost 4 hours for the last two parts for this volume. Oh my gosh, just so well. But, all right, let's say that we are being preyed upon by Vecna. Micah, what's the song that's going to save you and bring you back to reality?
Ooh.
Heart Like a Grave by Insomnium.
Nice. I like it was right there. I didn't warn them what I was going to ask.
Oh, that is a good one.
So, I might go out with it. You guys would like the first minute and a half. You wouldn't like the rest of it.
I think that's a little presumptuous by Micah because he's saying what we would and wouldn't like.
It is.
That's
interesting. You set the tone.
Okay. Yeah. Scott. I'll play it for you all the way through sometimes. It's like 7.5 minutes.
Yeah. Interesting. Very interesting. Are you asking me?
I am.
Okay. So mine would have to be Red Barchetta by Rush. So
I knew it would be a Rush song.
Everybody who knows me knows it'd be a Rush song. But it's like, you know, Red Barchetta, I just have a lot of great memories of that. And, you know, my second, which I've always thought would be my walk-up song if I ever made, you know, the pros in baseball, which I won't, but I thought it would be, would have been YYZ, because it's my absolute favorite karaoke song. And any of you who get that joke, extra points for you, because it's the perfect karaoke song for me.
My perfect karaoke song is the only song that I think I know the first verse of, because I can't learn lyrics, but it's Shamalama Ding Dong.
Oh, man. Oh.
You would appreciate YYZ then, Micah. That's all I'm going to say. So, Nick, what about you? What's your song that's going to save you?
Africa by Toto.
Okay. Really?
Yeah. That's just one of the most obscure songs. I used to listen to it to pump up the board meetings. It's something that will always get me moving and dancing like a fool on the dance floor. Wow. So I think I'd be blessing the reins.
That's an interesting question. That's kind of one of those open-ended ones. Maybe we should throw something up on the Nerd Show, you know, tomorrow morning and just say, hey, you know, let us know. What would be your – what song would save you in that environment? That would be kind of interesting to see how many answers we get to that. We might get four. Who knows?
Right.
It'd be kind of cool to ask that question. And I think Micah's prepping for the song. We can see
air drumming in the studio.
I've gotten to the part where you guys wouldn't like. Oh. You'd like. So yeah. It's kind of, it's metal. And it's a type of metal that a lot of people, it's not like super, super hardcore.
Yeah.
But it's a ballad, and there's some growling in it. And a lot of people don't like growling.
Is it slam?
I don't care.
Slam metal?
I think it's some kind of... It's not melodic death metal.
Okay.
It's a lot slower than that. Okay. It's somewhere in that area.
Well, Mike, I think when you play us out after this segment, you should start like 5 seconds before it ends the part that we would like, and then we get 5 seconds of that, and then we get 5 seconds of the part you don't think we'd like, and then we can...
We'll tell you off air.
You what we think.
Now, I want just to entertain the thought, Micah, of you saying it's metal, or it's going to be metal, in a British accent. It's going to be metal.
It's going to be metal.
That wasn't bad. I didn't think you were
going to... Oz goes up to 11. No, one goes up to 11.
No, this one goes to 11. One louder. You know, you'll be banging out your guitar and you're at 10. Where you go from there? You got nothing. This one's one louder.
That's a great movie.
Hey, you know, there's your Nigel Tufnel for the day.
Never saw the
Derek
sequel.
Derek Smalls, actually. I apologize. Nigel is the lead singer and Derek Smalls is the guitarist that goes to 11. And, you know, very tragic, tragic movie about all the different drummers' death in Spinal Tap. And, you know, that was the first time I ever learned that dozens of people die from spontaneous combustion every year. I just didn't know that.
Shocking.
Shocking.
Unfortunate.
Great film. I can't believe we went from Stranger Things to Spinal Tap in the same sentence.
Well, both have to do with the 80s.
They do. Good point. Good point. Yeah. Fair. Yeah. I mean, I don't know that you could get away with wrapping a cucumber in aluminum foil to go through security nowadays, but... If you don't know what that means and you haven't seen the movie, you should go watch it again because that's a great part of the movie.
So. Well, for the rest of this segment, cucumbers and aluminum foil.
Yes.
Sounds like
a cucumber wrapped in aluminum foil.
Is that your Saturday night?
No, but that is definitely a Spinal Tap reference. So
still on my list.
Yeah.
Movie
we're going to fix that for you sometime soon.
There's a lot of things that I need fixed.
I know.
A lot of things I've missed out on.
We're going to work on that.
Well, for the remainder of this segment and probably a good chunk of the next one, we'll talk about Obi-Wan Kenobi and that latest episode. I think you're going to get a lot of opinions on this from the three hosts of the Nerd Show, brought to you by Right Coast Pizza, that is.
I really wish we had video right now, because seeing your face, Monger... it was a face of disappointment.
Well,
he's on the show with us. He has that face every week.
I do not. That's not
fair. No,
this
was. I feel like you were unhappy with the show.
Well, you know, here's my challenge: is I like the show. I've really enjoyed, you know, the story. I've had some challenges, not with the acting, but with the writing of some of the characters. I was a little bit unhappy with some of the writing for Leia's character. I felt that it was too forced from an adult perspective. I think there's a way to make Leia very adult without her sounding like that she's trying to parrot a 16-year-old. And that's kind of what I felt like. And then
you want her to be precocious.
I want her to be
adult.
Yeah. I want her to be pushing the envelope in a way that is going to show that she's going to be able to do it. And the third sister's character, I really like her, but I don't appreciate the way they've written that story arc, because we don't have enough of the understanding of why she is so, you know, so fixated on Obi-Wan and why she is the way she is. And I think they've teased the idea that she was one of the Padawans that was in the Jedi Temple when Order 66 went down. But I think that we need a little bit more in depth about why she's so fixated and she is so much an Anakin supporter and why she hates Obi-Wan. And we just don't have enough of that for me to feel comfortable with where she's going with it. But the rest of it has been good. And then we'll wait until the next segment to talk about my other part, because I've been preparing for this for weeks and weeks and weeks, and we've talked about it, the problem that I was going to have, and I have it. So we won't.
Oh, see, I was talking.
I have the counter, I think, but we'll see.
Before you showed up, I was talking with Nick, so I don't know. Are we going to have a fight? Are we going to have a showdown?
Well, it'll be a showdown just like Episode 4 duel. Let's just say that.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Oh, it'll just be slow and weak, and we're going to use our words instead of heavy lightsabers. Not heavy. We'll talk more about Obi-Wan Kenobi after this brief break here on The Nerd Show. Stay tuned. To The Nerd Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA, or wherever you're getting your podcasts, Spotify, or going to 1310kfka.com to stay tuned with all of the great episodes of The Nerd Show.
Which are brought to you right from the Allo Communications Studios here in downtown Greeley, which is not very far from where any of us live.
Exactly.
Hometown boys.
All of us need more fiber in our lives.
Yeah.
Fiber optics,
yeah.
Fiber in our diet. I don't know how else I can use fiber. Yeah.
We can talk off air.
Obi-Wan Kenobi, this was, you know, the first two episodes were really good, really building up to something liking where they're taking the story. It has been renewed for season two. That was just recently announced on Twitter because of the overwhelming, viewership that it's had.
Yeah, it's had good viewership. And you know, not to change the subject, but because I don't want to talk about what we're going to talk about, so I'm delaying the inevitable. And Favreau's already confirmed that he's writing season four of The Mandalorian, which I'm super excited about. So that's cool. And
so much good Star Wars
it
coming.
It is. Well, and a completely...
Okay, so much Star Wars coming.
Yeah, there is a lot of good Star Wars stuff coming. I was actually at Disneyland this past weekend with the boys, and there was rumors that Boba and Fennec Shand were going to start showing up as characters in the park, and we actually ran into Fennec on Sunday. And so I got a picture with Cody and Fennec Shand, which was kind of cool to see that they're actually starting to bring some of those things out. And I appreciate the fact that they're doing it, and the cast member that they got to do it was phenomenal. I mean, just totally played the character perfectly and had a good interaction with some fans that we saw. And then Cody walked up and asked for a photo and never broke character and was asking him about his Stormtrooper shirt and all sorts of other things. But it was great. So
nice.
Thought it was good.
Yeah, I got to get down there soon. Now, before we dive in, because I know the conflict, it won't be a conflict, it'll be good discussion from probably three very different perspectives, too, I just saw a meme before we started the show today, and it was Doc talking to Marty McFly. We've got to go back in time to save Star Wars. And it went back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And it kind of really ripped into Well, George didn't want to do the prequels because he knew he didn't have the technology. So that's why we had so much time between the original and the prequels. And then by that point, fans were upset because of X, Y, and Z. The acting, Jar Jar Binks, blah, 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 blah. And then you kind of have some more stuff. And then by then, Star Wars is Star Wars. And then he sells it to Disney. This is all going back and forth between Doc and Marty, which further disconnects fans with what they truly fell in love with in the 70s and early 80s. And so their method was to go back to start to 1983 to convince George to keep on making Star Wars movies and keeping the original actors while they were still young and vibrant. Thoughts? Do you feel, with the shows that have come out, with The Mandalorian, with The Book of Boba Fett, and now with Obi-Wan, which this latest episode probably has the most controversy of any live action series that's come out in the last couple of years, and how that impacts some of the story arcs from the OG, from the original Star Wars in 77. If you could turn back time and find a way to convince George to keep writing in the 80s and 90s, I don't know. Would that be the preferred way to kind of clear what's happened? And I don't know. Of course, this is all just make-believe. Or just for me, I'm just kind of taking more Star Wars as it is, because I tell you, when Episode 7 came out and to hear the opening that I hadn't heard, since 2005 when I was still a teenager, to me, I was like, I don't really care what happens. This is Star Wars. We're getting Star Wars. But at the same time, what would have been had we had the technology back then to start with the prequels or to just continue things going so you didn't lose, Carrie Fisher early on when the movie was supposed to focus on her. We wouldn't have, aged actors that were being written out when, they really should have been the primary focus. I'm just curious.
Well, I think Han Solo would have been written out anyway.
Oh, he was going to go the Indiana Jones route.
Yeah.
I guess we'll just say, because I know we want to talk about Obi-Wan, and we've been going over the last couple of segments, but I don't know, Mike, are you happy with the direction of Star Wars, or waiting for things to pan out, or what?
It's kind of hit and miss on me. The latest trilogy really left a bad taste in my mouth. I did not really like the direction Episode 8 went in. It was kind of stupid. Some of it is me being nitpicky, and some of it was it just was not that great of a Star Wars movie. And Episode 9 did really redeem a lot of it, but still it wasn't, it hurt my Star Wars fanship. And a lot of it came back with The Mandalorian. But other Star Wars properties, TV shows, haven't been as good. Now, I haven't seen any of the animated, so I'm not as much of a Star Wars fan as other people. I've never had Cartoon Network, which I think one of the Star Wars was on.
Clone Wars, I think.
Clone Wars. Yeah. I never saw Clone Wars.
I'll take your temperature as a lukewarm reading right now.
Oh, my gosh. That was terrible. My opinion is that where the magic really kind of went sideways is, and again, this happens all the time, but, George's original, his first wife, Marcia.
I agree.
Was the editor for the first three films. And she didn't do it all on her own. I mean, she worked also with Paul Hirsch and Richard Chu in the original movie. But she continued on with Empire and Jedi. And I think that there was a dynamic from an editing standpoint that is very, very hard to replicate. And I think that Dave and John, if I can use their first names, like I know the men that have done with The Mandalorian, have done really good to sort of mimic that approach. They haven't nailed it perfectly, but I think they've gotten well or gotten close to the original. And I really think that that is why we're at where we're at. I think that's why we had challenges with the prequels. I think that's why we're having issues with the sequels, is that the magic that George's vision had combined with the editing skills of her really made the original trilogy such an amazing set of films. And we lost that. We didn't get that back. And I think when you have somebody like George who has got such amazing vision and everything else, it's hard for people who don't have that level of relationship with him to push back and say, no, I don't think this sounds right, and we got to go a different direction. And I think that's – if I could turn back time and I could do one thing in order to move things forward – I'm fine with whatever we want to do storyline, but I would somehow find a way to allow her to continue to work as an editor for the additional films moving forward. And I think we would be in a much better and happier place as Star Wars fans.
So instead of Back to the Future, where you're trying to, you know, make sure that they meet, you want to make sure they meet but don't get married so they can't get divorced so they can work professionally together.
I don't know. I mean, there's 1,001 reasons why that, you know, didn't continue. And I'm not here to speculate on that. I don't want to get into the weeds of what could have happened in order to make that. I just know that the professional chemistry that existed in those first three films, and it had a lot to do with the vision, a lot to do with the screenwriting, but it really had a lot to do with the editing that made it different. And, you know, you think about the things people complain about in the prequels. What is it? Oh, the dialogue is stale, and some of the interaction between Padme and Anakin is just, it feels like a couple of, you know, cardboard standouts talking to one another. That would not have happened.
Screen.
Yeah, I don't think that would have happened if you would have had Marcia still involved from an editing standpoint, because she was just, she brought magic to that original trilogy. And you think about, you know, the interaction with Leia and Luke and Leia and Han. I mean, there was real chemistry that came from that. And that isn't just the writing.
Well, that's, there was the a editing. Lot of that chemistry in Favreau's work.
Yes.
I think Favreau has that.
Yeah.
If you get, and not to criticize the overall director in Obi-Wan, it's not really here.
Yeah,
so
but
I
we
think
also
Favreau's
haven't seen
one of those
yet.
Rare people who has that ability to bring that magic.
Well, I'm curious who. Well, for me, I'll weigh in. Oh gosh, we only have a minute. See, spiraled down this
all
one.
Right,
this might have to be paused for our bonus.
No, that's all right. We'll talk about the controversy in the fourth segment. How's that? We'll wrap this up.
We can. I still don't know yet. I've been happy with the final product of Book of Boba Fett with the sequel trilogy. For me, not having grown up, you know, my first Star Wars in theaters were the prequels. I'm just so happy to have new Star Wars and more Star Wars and stories being told. Maybe it's retconning some things, maybe not. It is. But we're getting more Star Wars and we're getting characters we love fleshed out. And that could be overdone down the road. I don't know. We'll kind of see how that goes. Yep. But for now, I'm on the hot train of liking what's going on. Stay tuned for more of our recap of Obi-Wan Episode 3 after this break. Welcome back to the Nerd Show, led in by some of the most boring music ever written for Star Wars.
Oh, I know that you're the only reason that I'm going to even allow that is because I know you're being sarcastic.
Oh, I don't know. We could just sit here and listen to this whole segment and
you have no idea how many times I listened to this. I actually went and bought this on CD back when CDs were a thing.
Still kind of are.
And I love the name of the piece. But also, when you talk about the prequels, that is literally the turning point. And it's this whole concept that was the duel of the fates. And had Qui-Gon survived, you know, Anakin could have been the one that would have brought balance to the Force in a way that wasn't the way that it all turned out. And because he died, his fate went a different direction, which was not the one that we were looking for. But anyways, we can...
Well, that's something we can retcon. Maul lives and is in a live-action movie, and he gets sliced in half, yet Qui-Gon gets just a little, you know, gut stab, and he's dead. That's why I don't think the Inquisitor is dead in Obi-Wan, because, well, he's in Rebels. Who knows? Well, it is what it is. Scott and I have talked offline many times about, you know, what... It's been teased. We knew it was going to happen. A rematch of Obi-Wan versus Anakin with all the lightsaber training that both of them were doing months before the filming began to Hayden being back in suit on set, which I did read a tweet from Ewan McGregor. He said it was the only time he's ever seen in any film he's done where everyone who was involved in the project, not everyone, but most people were on set that day just to see Hayden come out in suit. He says he's never seen that in all the work that he's done of so many people waiting for that moment for for not just Hayden Christensen, but an actor to be on set for a scene. But in this case, it was Hayden Christensen as Darth Vader.
Oh, yeah.
Like, ah, just so cool. I mean, just to be a fly on the wall in the studio for that would have been
incredible. And I have no problem with that. I want to make sure that I go on record right now. I have no problem with Hayden being back. I have no problem with us seeing him in suit. I have no problems with any of that. What I have a problem with is what happened in episode 3. And here's my foundation. This is my opening argument why this should never have happened, okay? I'm going to read from you the exact dialogue that we get in A New Hope that was read in 1977. It says, "I've been waiting for you, Obi-Wan. We meet again at last. The circle is now complete. When I left you, I was but the learner, but now I am the master of evil." Or, "I am the master," and then Obi-Wan says, "Only a master of evil, Darth." But what we saw in episode 3 means that line literally doesn't exist. We literally threw away one of the most amazing lines for a, let's have a reunion of Jedi together, because we've now decided that, oh, 10 years earlier we got together and I almost kicked your butt, and if it weren't for somebody else, you know, shooting at my troopers, I would have killed you. Does he really care about those troopers?
Yeah, no. Vader's suit has to be fireproof at this point. I mean, you're telling me that Anakin Skywalker doesn't have a little bit of fear of fire?
No, Anakin definitely has a fear of fire. And so, again, the scene I think is filmed well. I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. But at my core, no, that never should have happened. I think that was a disservice to everybody who was a fan of the film in 1977 and what took place there and what we heard on screen and what we heard James Earl Jones say, you know, to Sir Alec Guinness, now is pointless, meaningless, and everybody's going, what?
Preach. Preach.
I'm okay with it, because how about this line? We don't really get, lightsabers, they were so... why does it have to be that one? George Lucas envisioned lightsabers to be really heavy and awkward and cumbersome. That's one of the reasons it was so slow back in 77. And, of course, that's been retconned with the prequels and with Luke and Vader fighting, because it's more, you know, it's a lot more. So that's already kind of been retconned from episode 4. But in episode 6, you get Luke convinced that there's some good in Vader. And Vader says, "Obi-Wan once thought as you did." Well, how would he have known that if they didn't meet up again in between those 24 years?
Because they had the battle on Mustafar, and he said it. He says, "There's still good in you, Anakin." And they literally are going through it, and Padme says the same thing to Obi-Wan. You know, there's still good in him. There's plenty of dialogue in Revenge of the Sith to back that up. They did a good job in that context to make sure that the dialogue in that film didn't undo anything that was done in Jedi. Nothing.
Well, and Vader's not a master yet. He was the master of evil, walking down the street snapping people's necks and stuff. Yeah. That was sinister.
Oh, absolutely.
But we meet again at last. At last could be. Well, I haven't seen you in a couple of years. How are those things? I think, Scott, just give it grace and let the series wrap to see how they can plug and fill that in, because if that line gets retconned, but we're still getting some epic Star Wars storytelling to bring in a new generation to wonder what the beef is between Obi-Wan and Vader, I think that's kind of neat.
I think we know what the beef is. I completely get it. I mean, I would have been fine, and I would have appreciated it tremendously more if there literally would have been that moment where Vader is looking for Obi-Wan. And I was literally praying during the episode when Obi-Wan's kind of doing that. I'm like, cool, just stay at arm's width. Just don't engage. Just find a way to escape. I'm like, just escape. Keep doing it. And then all of a sudden they show up and I'm like, you know, doggone it.
I thought at one point when they were, quote, fighting, I'm like, okay, this is some kind of force trick. He's force trick screwing around with him. And then I'm like, oh, wait, no, he's not.
Yeah, I just...
Now, I have a theory, and we'll see if this is trying to tie in some loops to what happened in Episode 9, but it's clear and obvious Obi-Wan does not have the connection to the Force that he once had.
No, he does not.
He's very weak, he's very depleted, and he's just a broken man. And he's, from what we can tell so far, probably hasn't been able to commune with Qui-Gon. Qui-Gon was at peace, he was one with the Force. You know, you go back to Rogue One, I'm one with the Force, the Force is with me. I don't think Obi-Wan's been able to connect with Qui-Gon, and he's weak. So my thoughts, my ideas, I don't know if that'll be this season. One, there's why would you have all that lightsaber training just to have a little duel that looked like it did on the Death Star? There's going to be something else that happens. I just don't know what. And also, when Vader has his helmet removed in 6, he's got that large scar and gash on his head that he doesn't have yet.
Right.
Does that come from Obi-Wan kicking his butt down the road? Well, how is Obi-Wan going to get his powers back?
Well,
what if at some point he gets in commune with Qui-Gon, enhances some kind of training, and then absorbs, you know, I don't know what the proper word for this yet, but absorbs kind of Qui-Gon's powers in order to kick Vader's butt into next Tuesday. And isn't that what Rey does, you know, when she's getting her tail kicked by the Emperor, he's all the Sith, and then she's, well, I am all the Jedi. And is that kind of leading up to, oh, well,
That's more of that Star Wars Harry Potter magic that I don't like.
Well, the more that you continue writing and bringing in new shows, you're going to get that. We had the Force healing that we knew happened in the extended universe, but you get that with Rey in Episode 9, but you had to watch Mandalorian the week before to know that Grogu can Force heal things. So they're expanding a lot. And, well, it comes at a sacrifice from the OG from 45 years ago. And, you know, I think things are going to get a little cloudy. And I'm hoping whoever is, you know, overseeing all the Star Wars stuff has those dots connected well in advance, so they're not trying to tie things up at season finales from shows. I didn't think this was going to get a second season.
And
I'm kind of shocked
either.
It is already. So what were you doing? You had 6 episodes, and you were going to try to tie up the storyline. Now what happens? What happens in season 2? That's what kind of gets me worried is there an end game, an end plot?
Well, we already know what the end plot is because
we've seen it.
Obi-Wan dies on the Death Star, and Luke is
But look
able
at
to
his
on,
line
so.
There. If he's, you know, able to commune with Qui-Gon, and maybe we'll say he absorbs Qui-Gon's powers, that line that he says, if you strike me down, I will become more powerful than you could possibly imagine. What, become a Force ghost and don't even train Luke? Just tell him to go to Dagobah? There's got to be something more there.
But I think we saw that with Yoda, you know, in the sequels, where he's able to kind of do the stuff that he did, and even with Luke when he caught the lightsaber. So I'm... Just real quick for people coming up next week, we're super excited. We're actually going to have Andrew Mose, who is the vice president of Fan Expo, is going to be on in order to talk about what's coming up for Denver Fan X here over the 4th of July weekend. And then we've also got somebody else going to be around, right?
We got our good friend Farley.
That's
Remember,
right.
As a former host of the Nerd Show before life got busy, he's going to talk to us about a Lego competition at the Greeley Stampede. To learn more about that, tune in next week for an awesome day of interviews. This has been the Nerd Show. Gosh, wow. Nerdy. It's been a fun day. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll tune in again next week and all the nerdy stuff that we have going on every single week. Nerdy, you stay nerdians. Nerdians, you stay nerdy. Wow, that just happened.
Wow.
We'll just have to cut it off.